This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Wong Shaoni with Khoo Soo Chuang, and this is The Morning Run. Now, in about 30 minutes after the 8 a.m. news, we'll be having the breakfast grill where Lin Mark speaks to Kenneth Arodos, who is the Managing Director of Harvey Norman Asia.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting because it's a good temperature gauge as to one of the most beleaguered sectors due to the pandemic, right? And of course, Harvey Norman is kind of like, it's a bit in the bulge bracket, but it's also a little bit in the premium bracket, right? Because they sell expensive stuff as well. So I think his strategies on how to get out of the virus and how good business is or bad currently is will be a good barometer.
Yeah, I think that would be an interesting conversation. But in the meantime, you know, we know that India just recently banned 59 of China's largest apps. And this has, of course, spurred a discussion on how global powers have shifted from fighting using old-fashioned weapons to trade and now technology. And the rise of techno-nationalism, which is where one country views another's technological advancements as a threat to nationalism, security, and even the economy, has been on the rise.
Yeah, so obviously this will serve as a template, right? Because if India somehow finds a way to successfully carry out its decision, this means that's a model from everybody, from Europe to Scandinavia to America, in terms of trying to deal with the perceived or otherwise security threats from TikTok. But it also means that this is another level of the the border dispute between India and China in Ladakh, the Kashmir region, which has every chance of exploding to the global consciousness.
Yeah, and this is juxtaposed against this ongoing trade war between China and America, where, you know, there's been big fights over 5G technology. It's been a contentious issue. So how will all this turn out now? To help us understand is Alex Capri, visiting senior fellow at the NUS Business School, as well as a research fellow with the Heinrich Foundation in Singapore. Good morning. Thanks for joining us, Alex.
Good morning. Nice to be on.
Yeah, first question. Beyond the recent issue between India and China, we've seen technology being increasingly weaponized. Now, what's driving this rise in techno-nationalism?
Well, from a competitive standpoint, you mentioned the trade war already between the United States and China, but that competition is much more broad and overarching than just trade. It's a geopolitical rivalry. It's increasingly an ideological rivalry between the Chinese system and the open market system, the liberal democratic system. So in order to compete in this new rivalry, it's all about the industries of the future, who's going to dominate those, who's going to have an innovation lead or edge. And hence, we have this rise of techno-nationalism, which you've just defined. So that is really the underpinning of the whole. Really, it's not just U.S.-China. It's essentially a systemic rivalry between, you could say, the West, the European Union, and other similar type systems. And so technology is at the heart of that. Industries of the future require all kinds of cutting edge, leading edge technology. China has made that an absolute national priority of its state centric system. It's come out with the so-called Made in China 2025 plan, which takes 10 high-profile industries, everything from robotics and AI and automation to semiconductors and so forth. And China is looking to, number one, cut off its high level of reliance still on U.S. technology and Western technology and non-Chinese technology, particularly in the semiconductor sector, which is, again, the semiconductors are the heart and the soul of any advanced technology system. So with these priorities very publicly stated, with the trade war going on, we now have this focus on technology.
Yeah, Alex, what appears to be happening now is almost like a game of Risk, where there are various economic and nuclear powers trying to jostle for position on the global map. India, of course, is a nuclear power, so is China, and America and Russia is in the fray as well, not to mention the Japanese and the other smaller but equally wealthy European nations. How does it all play out, though, in the next, say, say 3 to 5 years, and how do they stack up in terms of taking sides and allies?
Yeah. So when we look at these systemic differences that I just mentioned, one of the most contentious roles of technology is in fact directly linked to ideology. So for example, if we have cutting edge technology being used to censor what citizens are able to read or look at, right? If we have cutting edge technology being used to monitor people's behavior, either through facial recognition or, you know, other means. If we have cutting edge technology being used to essentially, turn data into a surveillance tool, or to be, or if for whatever reason there is no data privacy, these are stark differences, you know, in terms of ideology between a country like China and the European Union or the United States. So the ideology is going to affect who trades with who and who sells what technology to who. And this is what we've been seeing now with the export controls that the United States and countries in the European Union who are part of the so-called Wassenaar arrangement have been applying to exports to China. So, for example, the telecommunications equipment manufacturer Huawei has been put on a restricted entity list. Not only is this an issue where American companies cannot sell technology to them, but now foreign companies that are using American technology to make products, which they then sell to Huawei, are now being banned, right? So, and there's a whole list of other Chinese companies, SenseTime, Hikvision, Dahua, and others. So we have these ideological differences between these systems, state-centric, autocratic, versus laissez-faire, open market, democratic, which now are the underlying sort of motivation for limiting who does business with who sells what technology to who. So consequently, we will see markets, the global trade landscape, fracturing, and we will see standards being applied within these fractured, balkanized groups of trading countries around ideology, technology, and geopolitics.
And Alex, very briefly, right, what happens for the countries caught in the middle who are part of the global supply chain, who are manufacturers like Malaysia? What can we do, or what should we do?
Well, it's a difficult position because a country like Malaysia, of course, has very strong trading ties with China. But there's also significant investment from, Western companies, European companies. And as the global economy continues to shift towards a knowledge economy and towards a technology-driven economy, Malaysia and countries like Singapore are going to try to sort of play the middle, if you will, avoid a simple binary choice if it's possible. I think Singapore is doing a pretty good job of that, between balancing and sort of tiptoeing around the issues between China and the U.S. It's a very difficult position. But that's the reality. The other reality is that we have this phenomenon of strategic decoupling taking place, where previous supply chains that were coupled to China or that were centered on China, they have been strategically decoupling because of the trade war and because of the fear of increased export controls and restrictions. And so companies are hedging and they're moving operations out of China. So in that regard, Malaysia could, in fact, you know, work to attract some of that new investment and some of those shifting supply chains. You know, we have countries like Vietnam that have been, you know, absorbing a lot of new investment because of this restructuring and because of this decoupling. So that's certainly an option, you know, for Malaysia. But there is absolutely no getting around the fact that the world going forward now is, you know, looking at this technology cold war between China and, you know, the rest, in China and the U.S. certainly, and the West. So that's the hard reality going forward.
And that was Alex Capri, visiting senior fellow at NUS Business School, as well as a research fellow with Heinrich Foundation in Singapore. Now, up next, we'll be discussing the outcome of the Chini by-elections with Ben Sufian, Program Director of the Merdeka Centre. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.